Who's going to know that your kid was in front of the screen for an hour? First of all, an hour is probably not even that long. And she said, nobody's going to know. And I said, well, then why are you worried about what people think?
Right. Yes. Yes.
It's like what they would think. They. But who is they? And do they even know? And they are too busy with their own problem.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Welcome to Motivation to Write. I am so happy you're here. Today's episode is audio only, so there is no video in case you go to the website looking for our video footage of today's interview with Dr. Priyanka Nayak. And I'm so excited that you are here for this conversation. She is a physician who helps, she also coaches mothers to help them manage burnout. So before we jump into our conversation, let's learn a little bit more about Dr. Priyanka Nayak. Dr. Priyanka Nayak is a working mom physician who has always learned and practiced with science. It is this principle, putting a science to life, that helps make everything more manageable. After years in clinical practice, Dr. Nayak found her favorite part of work was troubleshooting everyday problems with patients, but more so colleagues, nurses, social workers, and other female physicians. And helping other professionals to improve their well-being, she realized that she wanted to start transforming her contribution to the world. Motherhood was the compelling catalyst that propelled her to finally take a leap and pursue that change. Dr. Nayak works with professional mothers to help reduce their stress and anxiety levels by 50% in 12 weeks. Her clients make small incremental changes to obtain larger long-term results. After working with her, they surface from the heavy cloud of day-to-day pressure and thrive. Dr. Nayak specializes in the prevention of professional mom burnout. She tailors programs to each client's individual values and needs. Okay, good morning. I am here with Dr. Priyanka Nayak, and she is a physician, right? A physician. Okay.
Yes.
And the wonderful thing about Miss Dr. Priyanka is that she helps mothers de-stress. And this is perfect because I was telling you earlier that a lot of my readers are mothers and they have a lot on their plate, including writing, keeping up with their blog, being productive. They have to take care of their kids. They have spouses or mates. They have day jobs. So it's a lot that we're juggling. Oh, not me. I'm not a mother. It's just like we, but a lot that my readers are juggling. So I know that you talk about, how there's issues with burnout, with feeling like failures, with time scarcity and self-sabotage. And I just kind of want to start getting into all that. But before we do, can you tell us a little bit about your journey, like how you get into this space of helping mothers?
Yeah. So, you know, I went to medical school and got myself through that without any trouble, became trained for that during residency, went to, started working, and that was overwhelming, and I was married. And I used to feel stressed, and I used to really pride myself on feeling stressed and using that. You know, stress also can be good and it can be bad, but that stress helped kind of get me to where I needed to be. And I was high strung and really doing things at a fast pace and being really productive. So I was really proud of that. And then I was managing everything just fine. And then when my son was born, everything changed. And I completely, like, I could not keep doing, like, I couldn't keep going the way I was going prior to him being born, like going at a mile a minute, like not stopping to, like, I never really took care of myself. I wasn't, you know, into working out. I really didn't do anything. I would go to work, maybe watch some, you know, Real Housewives to unwind.
I used to love Real Housewives. It still comes on?
Oh yeah.
There's a whole bunch of them I know.
But, it's been on for, I think, like almost 20 years now. But So, you know, that was my routine. Like I would just watch some trash TV to unwind, and no offense to anyone who doesn't think it's trash TV, but, and that was really it. And I was okay. Like I was having a good time. I was surviving. And when he was born, everything changed. I had to be better, you know, and also I had a whole new list of responsibilities on my plate. And I think it's different for everyone, but I think women, often we have to kind of function as quote unquote men, like at work and mm-hmm. in the world, but then at home we have all these extra responsibilities. And many households, I think it's 50-50, but a lot of households, the mom is taking on the majority of, or the woman is taking on the majority of the, you know, responsibilities with the childcare and meal prep and cleaning and whatever. So I just got totally overwhelmed, and I was at a point where I was so stressed, like starting to feel anxious, and like I really felt like I couldn't go back to work full time, like at this state. So I started doing a lot of Googling and like, you know, stress management and this and that, and lots of reading, podcast listening. I've always been a self-help junkie, but I took it to a whole nother level. And then basically I made a bunch of changes in my life, really started to become more disciplined, more regimented about taking care of myself, got myself a coach also. And then eventually, because I loved the concept of life coaching, I put myself into life coaching school as well to get my certification, which led me to becoming a life coach, which is what I am now. But essentially I had to learn how to put myself first in many ways in order to like really take care of myself. That way I could take care of others, because in my work, even as a physician, I take care of patients, and at home I'm taking care of my husband, my child. So often I think we have a lot of guilt about helping ourselves, but without doing that, we're really of no use to anybody else. So that's a big part of what I do. Well, what I practice myself, but also try and help the moms who work with me to learn how to put themselves first, because people have a really tough time doing that.
Yeah. And how do you do that? Especially if you have like an infant, and you know, the infant just needs you all the time, and you don't have like help at home, let's say. And, you know, I can't take a shower. I can't go to the bathroom. It's just, and a lot of them feel guilty for just even hiring a babysitter for the night to take care of their child. Maybe not an infant, but, you know, when they get a little older. How do you help women to kind of get over that? Like, it's okay to take some time for yourself.
Yeah. So of course the newborn phase, right when they're born, is a tough time. It's tough without help. And you do end up kind of being like manning your baby 24/7. And then when you have more children, that's a tough time. But once that phase, kind of those first few months pass, if you're able to, the main thing is to let things go and learn that there is no perfect mom, there is no perfect parent. Mm. And you may have to, let's say, if you just, especially with COVID, it's really hard to get extra help because you don't, you know, you may not want to bring somebody new to your house and things like that. So that's become a whole nother, you know, set of circumstances that now we have to deal with. But let's say you're working from home, you have an important meeting and you just can't be disturbed, but there's nobody to take care of your kid, like a 2-year-old. Yeah. You might have to just put them in front of the screen, let's say. Like that's not ideal, but it is what it is, just letting go and doing things that just aren't that perfect idea of what you have in your head, like having to embrace that imperfection and a lot of letting go, but also realizing that taking care of yourself is not a selfish thing in the sense that you're also modeling to your kids that, you know, mom is taking care of herself. Mom is working out. Mom is doing things for herself. And I think that that's good for them to see, because when they're parents someday, they should be doing the same thing. And, you know, so modeling good self-care behavior, I think that helps. If you think of it as something you're partially doing for your kids, then it's helpful in, you know, letting go of that mom guilt and realizing that as you try and, you know, you get that babysitter, you take some time for yourself, you actually end up being more present when you're with your kids, as opposed to being with your children 24/7 and perhaps being on the phone a lot or being distracted or just like your mind is elsewhere and you're not making the most of that time. But if you're able to get away from them for a little bit, just to do something small for yourself, even savoring your morning cup of coffee, for example, which is like 5 minutes, you are going to come back a little bit more refreshed.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you mentioned something earlier, how some of us take pride in being stressed. And I just find that so interesting and also very sad. It's almost like, you know, the harder you work, the more like pain you're in, then the better you are. Like, you're just a better person. I'm better than you because look at me. I'm stressed. I'm working hard and you're relaxed. That's being lazy. You're not doing, you know, where does that come from?
Totally. I think, you know, there is something about appearing busy and appearing exasperated that perhaps gives off the picture that we're really busy and productive. But of course, those two things don't go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I also think a lot of times it is a man's world, unfortunately, and we are expected to be like men and women. At work, we have to be manlike or whatever, like whatever that means, right? And then at home, we have to be the woman. And, you know, of course, gender norms and all these kinds of things are changing a lot, but there is still very much that pressure on women to, you know, do what they're like, keeping track of the household stuff, cooking, cleaning, and then at work, making sure you contain your emotions. And, you know, and of course, we don't get away with things the way men can. Mm-hmm. Like, if we just don't come across the same way. And, you know, we also are often perceived as hysterical and high strung, because actually the word, I'm not sure if people know this, but hysterical, hist, that word comes from womb. Mm. So inherently, it's associated with a female anatomy part, like, which is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so it's a label for women, you know, which is crazy. Like, and probably rarely do men get called hysterical.
Right.
Hysterectomy, for example, is a removal of the
uterus. Oh, yes. I didn't even notice that. That is so interesting.
But it's really messed up. So
yeah, it is. Because I think we look at everything as being either feminine or masculine. And so when you're a woman, like, you have to take on both. Whereas you're a man, you're masculine, and then you're not even thinking about the feminine. You're just masculine all the time. But with women, there's like the expectation that the expectation is that you're feminine most or all of the time, but there are situations, especially when you're in the workplace, where you have to take on that masculine, those masculine energies. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So then let's talk about this concept of time scarcity, because I feel it. I'm not even a mother, and I feel like I don't ever have enough time to get things that I want to get done. But is it a matter of me not having the time, or am I just not making the time? Are my priorities messed up?
Okay, great question. It's a question, not your priorities are messed up. What are your priorities? And when people say, I don't have the time, that's not necessarily true. I will always say, I'm not making the time for, like, or I don't want to make the time for this right now, which is often true. But Laura Vanderkam, I read Laura Vanderkam's book called, I think, What Successful People Do Before Breakfast, and that completely changed my life, talking about what CEOs did. But people literally from like 6 a.m. until 8:30 a.m., all the things they would accomplish was incredible. And that's when I started honing in on my morning routine before I went to work to get myself grounded for the day. But if you really feel like you're overextended and you have, like, quote unquote, no time, the best thing to do is to find really small increments of time. For example, if you're in a really long grocery line, let's say, like, really extremely long, it's going to be 5 to 10 minutes, you could pull up a book on your iBooks or something, or whatever, on your Kindle on your phone, and you could do 5 minutes of reading, 5 to 10 minutes of reading. You do that several times a week, and the next thing you know, you've read for a half hour. And over a month, let's say, you'll end up reading an entire book. Or on your commute, it's always easy to, like, books on tape or things like that. You can get things done, but it it might not be like, if you want to work out, you say, oh, I don't have an hour to work out. I have 45 minutes. Wake up, put your workout clothes on, and then do something for 10 minutes, let's say. Because that's a 15 minute production. But if you do that 10 minutes, maybe do some push-ups or something before you go to bed, whatever, that ends up being like 15 to 20 minutes of working out. And there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting, because I think when we think of spending time on doing things, if it's exercising or reading, we think we have to like block out an hours, right? You have to spend an hour doing that, an hour doing that. And I know I've mentioned this book so many times during these interviews, but Atomic Habits by James Clear, I think is his name. He talks about if you want to start a new habit, then you do it in like 2 minute increments per day. Like you take 2 minutes to read, and next day take another, and eventually it will build. And so this sounds like something very similar, where you don't have to invest a whole lot of time. Just find those spaces where you have a minute or two, and get something done. And by the end of the week, you might have done an hour.
Yeah. Absolutely. Same thing goes for writing, right? You can write for 10 minutes. Maybe you're blocked for the first five, but then 5 minutes you write, and then you might have a paragraph there. And then eventually you're going to get a lot farther than not putting any time in. I think we spend a lot of time in our heads thinking, I don't have time, and there's no time. And we also create lofty goals for ourselves that are not achievable. So I always tell my clients to come up with a goal that you can actually meet. Like, for example, 20 minutes of exercise 3 times a week, that's usually doable. But if you start saying, oh, well, I want to do an hour and a half, and I want to lift weights and this, I mean, that's just not going to happen. Like, likely, often, a lot of us don't have time for that, or don't want to carve out that time, or be sleepless, or whatever it is, right?
So, yeah.
Or if you're tired, working out for 10 minutes or doing a 5 minute meditation is better than nothing.
Okay. So I just thought of something, because another point that he makes in this book is that a lot of times what we're seeking to do, like, for example, if you want to start a workout routine and you want to make that a habit, you want to take on the identity of someone who values their health and is fit and is healthy. And so he says, you know, start thinking of yourself as that person, like start taking on that identity, and then you'll start to act like someone who actually values their health and is healthy. And I'm wondering if for mothers, there's like this identity thing where they feel like, if I'm a mother, then I can't like take the extra time to any minute I have, any extra minute, I have to put that toward like being a mother.
You know, we put ourselves last. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being a mother isn't just about, I think, being a mother of children. Often you're motherly with your spouse, for example, and if you're just a caretaker and taking care of everybody else, and you come last. So yes, I agree. I think that is part of the identity of being a mom, is, you know, I come last, everybody else comes first. Also, mom guilt is completely inherent. You just can't win. And especially, I think, with social media and all the info out there, the standard to which modern day moms hold themselves are just ridiculous. And I was talking to a client the other day, she had put her kid in front of the screen for a bit. And she said, you know, I just felt so bad about it, even though I don't think screen time's that bad. I said, well, why do you feel bad about it? And she said, I don't know, like how other people would judge me. And I said, but who's going to know that your kid was in front of the screen for an hour? First of all, an hour is probably not even that long. And she said, nobody's going to know. And I said, well, then why are you worried about what people think?
Right. Yes. Yes.
It's like what they would think. They. But who is they? And do they even know? And they are too busy with their own problems. Like, and people who are, you know, I always think people who are out there shaming their friends, judging, like mom shaming and all that nonsense, that's not your friend. So don't freaking talk to them about those kinds of things. Like, keep them at an arm's length. I don't interact with those kinds of people in my life, because it's not helpful.
Yeah. We were just talking about this the other night, how we spend so much time in other people's heads, and we can never know exactly what anyone is thinking. I mean, most of the time what we think they're thinking, they're not. So it's just a complete waste of energy to even try to figure out what someone is thinking. Stop minding their business and mind your own business. Right.
Focus on yourself, yes, and what you want. Forget about the external validation. It will never come. You need to find the validation within yourself. That is something that it took me a long time to learn that one. But always looking for other people's praise, it may or may not come. You better start praising yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Do mothers ever feel like they got it? Like, do they ever feel like, I'm doing this right, I'm doing a good job? Or is there always some, you know, doubt and, because I don't know if I've ever met a mother who is like totally confident in being a mother.
No, I think most moms are just, we're all just kind of waffling through it, doing the best that we can. And I'm sure most of us feel like we could always be better and doing better. And I think sometimes just, first of all, we're all going to screw up our kids in one way or another, whether we mean to or not, right? So that just know that that's a fact.
Mothers get blamed for everything.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm blaming my mom for tons of stuff, like as we speak. Yeah. So, but, you know, that's going to happen, right? But all we can do is we do the best that we can. We try to be mindful with the circumstances that we have.
Yeah. This, you know, I just thought of something. So as I heard it, I was listening to a psychologist, I think it was a psychologist, and he was saying that, you know, parents unknowingly put a lot of their stuff onto their kids. And so if we can learn how to maybe put ourselves first, well, parents can learn how to put themselves first, then that will cut down on all of the insecurities and fears and stresses that they're passing on to their kids. Because the kids will grow up and do like what their parents do. I mean, I do things that my mother and my father did, and it's just this cycle. But if you can learn how to, as you're saying, to really take the time to value your own feelings and to value your own physical mental health, that will help break the cycle so that your kids, like you said earlier, will model you when they become older.
Absolutely. I think for us moms who are doing it all, working and taking care of stuff at home, it's so important to be mindful about our own mental health and being well, whatever that means. For each person it is different, but the more that we are able to take care of ourselves, the better we are going to be for other people, actually. Mm-hmm. And and modeling what that is like, healthy mentally, healthy physically. That's what the kids should be seeing their parents working out all the time. Like, you know, on a regular basis, they're going to grow up and do that. That's great. Or meditating or whatever. We do a lot of breathing in my house, like belly breathing, and you know, my son's too. And we, Sesame Street has like this collaboration with Headspace, and they do all this cool stuff. Mm-hmm. But one day I was doing something, I was putting some lotion on my hands, and I just took a few deep breaths because I was feeling exasperated. And my son was like, mommy, are you doing lotion and belly breathe? and then he started breathing too, but it was really good. And we talk about our feelings, and it's okay to be, I think a lot of us grew up with, it's not okay to have negative feelings. It's not okay to cry. It's not okay to be mad. And, you know, we talk about, I'll say, I feel a little bit of anger right now. I'm going to like take a few deep breaths. And I do the whole thing right in front of my kid to normalize, like, it's okay to have feelings. It's okay for them to not be happy all the time, but we just have to process them in a healthy way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think a lot, like back in the day, when I say back in the day, I think maybe like my parents' generation, their parents, kids were seen and not heard. You know, it was just like, there was a separate table for them at dinner time or whatever. And totally. You don't say you're not partaking in this conversation. This is grown folk stuff, and your opinion doesn't really matter now. And I think that's really changing for the better as generations kind of progress, because kids are very smart and they have a lot of insights to share, and we can learn a lot from them. But if they're silenced all the time, and they just grow up to think that their opinion doesn't even matter.
Absolutely. There's a much more collaborative parenting genre going on right now. Also, another good book is by Esther Wojcicki, and she has an acronym, but it's kindness, collaboration, creativity, so kindness. Oh, kindness, I said, but it's just about like the kids actually deciding for themselves and being empowered, as opposed to us telling them what to do, which I think is really useful. Because in the workforce someday, if they're creative and they can come up with their own ideas and not have to be spoon-fed everything, then they're really going to skyrocket.
Yeah, yeah. Can we talk a little bit about self-sabotage? Like, what are ways that mothers self-sabotage?
Ugh. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, there are probably mothers that are doing it and they don't even know it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the I'm busy, I'm overextended, I'm miserable, and this is just how it is. I hate my job and I hate XYZ, and then not really doing anything about it. And having the, I think one of the biggest sabotaging things we can do is thinking that if our circumstances change, then it'll get better. Like once, you know, for example, COVID, obviously, yeah, when it's over, it probably will get better. That's true. But it's not like there's going to be a new set of problems. There are always stressors. There are always triggers. There are always problems. That's just a part of the human experience. And we never know what's coming. So finding happiness and fulfillment and inner peace truly within yourself is the goal, because the outside stuff is always going to be changing and getting in the way.
Okay, so I think I understand. So the self-sabotage comes in where you don't take an action to improve whatever, to improve your stress, to help your stress, because you feel like it's always going to be this way.
Like you're not taking any ownership of your own role in everything. And it's always, you know, the other stuff, whatever the quote unquote stuff is, but the stuff is the problem. And yes, the stuff is a part of the problem, because yes, you know, homeschooling, for example, right now, I mean, for working moms, it's insanity. Like it's just, you know, so it's tough, but you still have to find a way to find that inner peace within yourself in order to kind of handle that as best as you can. But if you just, if you let the outer crap like get the best of you, then you're just gonna give into it and let it suck you in, and then that really is sabotaging, because you just get sucked into this tornado and like you can't get out, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah So it's, yeah, as you said, it's taking ownership, not blaming everything on everything else. Like taking some responsibility.
Yeah, like people say, oh, you know, when this happens, it's going to get better. Or like when I change this, it's going to get better. And it's like, well, but it might not. There might be, there's going to be another problem.
Right. And when you do that, you're giving over your power to whatever outside force or person you're putting the blame on. But when you at least take some ownership with it, then you have the power. And that's empowering, because now you can take a step to actually change your circumstance or situation.
Absolutely. I love that word that you're using. It's totally about the power, because in a world where we feel like we can't control anything, like literally there's not much we can control, but what we can control is ourselves, our own thoughts. Technically the thoughts lead to the feelings. So we can have control of our own thoughts, our feelings, our actions. And there's so much power in that. We actually are so much more powerful than we think. It's just a matter of honing in on that power.
Right. Because when you don't hone in on it, then we get to one of your other points, is that you feel like a failure, because everything is just collapsing and you're like, oh my gosh, this is happening and she's doing this and this and blah, 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 blah. But when you're in those situations, when you feel like everything is just crumbling, there is like at least one small thing you can do to start to shift things. Right. This concept of being a failure. So I was listening to another psychologist. She was actually not a children's psychologist, but she specialized in working with parents and kids. And she was saying that, you know, as parents teach, we tend to teach kids like in terms of success and failure, like you're either successful or you failed. And she said, perhaps we should start just switching kind of that, or changing that narrative, instead of saying either success or failure, just say like there are outcomes and you assess the outcomes and decide whether or not this is the outcome you wanted, and then you change it. So it's not that you're a failure, it's just that you got this particular outcome and now
let's do something different, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when a mother feels like a failure, does that concept of failure come from, you know, all of what society is saying that a mother should be? Does it come from like what she's seeing on social media? Or is this something a little bit more like innate to mothers that they just feel like if they're not, it's just, I don't know how to, like a biological innate feeling that this is not what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm failing?
I think a lot of it is actually external, social media, societal upbringing,
yeah,
holding, you know, people to really high standards. Indian culture, it's all about like results. And, you know, my dad would always say to me, it doesn't matter how much you study, like you have to produce, you must produce. It's all about the production, but actually there's a whole process along the way. And, you know, I had certain things that I wasn't good at or whatever. And that ended up really helping me build grit. Like not everything came easily to me. And there was some beauty in some of the quote unquote failures or whatever. There was something right. good to come out of that. But, and life is not like that. Like we all make mistakes all the time. And hence, you know, perfectionism is the worst thing in the world. And humans will never be perfect because we inherently, you know, we make mistakes. And, we set ourselves up for failure by wanting to be perfect. So just kind of starting to get rid of that. But of course, with social media, people are posting these beautiful pictures and coordinated outfits of them and their family, which I think is great. I can never do that. Like I don't want to put the time and energy into it for me personally. It's not my priority, but it makes people feel like they have to live to this certain standard. And life is not... it's not some cookie cutter journey. There's so much to it. And I'm now starting to realize, like, as I grow up, you know, there's something to be said about the process. I never thought that before, but the actual process, the actual journey, not the end result and end product, there is a lot of significance to the in-between, and that has, you know, impact on your life and often for the better.
Yeah, and it seemed like with motherhood, it's always a process, right? I mean, there's no end product in motherhood, is there? I mean, even when your child is an adult, it's still a process. It would be advantageous to believe in this journey theory than I have to have this particular outcome, and I will be a successful mother, because I don't think it ever ends if you're a mother.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I like how you mentioned like there's a gift in the failure. And I think that's overlooked a lot. But, you know, I've talked with a lot of people who say, yeah, this horrible thing happened to me, and I couldn't see it at the moment, but this wonderful thing came out of that horrible event. And even if it's not some, like, you know, you win the lottery or something big like that, it could be something internal, like something you learn about yourself, which then shifted the way that you interacted with people or the way that you saw the world. And so, yeah, I think that's a good point to remind people that there is like a gift somewhere in that failure. Yeah. You talk about self-love too. That's a big one. I've actually heard people like question, is it even possible to really love yourself? Because you have all these crazy thoughts that are always saying otherwise, saying horrible things to you about yourself. And we always feel so negatively sometimes in our bodies. How do we get to self-love?
We are very conditioned to criticize ourselves.
Yeah.
I have a lot of my clients do as a part of their morning practice, you know, there's gratitude practice. And one of the other things to add on to that is reflecting on, you know, 5 things you did well.
Mm.
And clients have a very, very tough time with that. Like they'll come back and they'll be like, you know, I just, like, it was really hard for me to come up with 5 things. Like, I don't know, like there was really nothing that I did that well. And I said, it could be as simple as I washed my hair today and that was an ordeal and like, good for me. Like, yeah, that was great. Like, I achieved that, right? Like, it could just, it doesn't have to be, I said, you don't have to win the Nobel Peace Prize to do something well. It could
just be anything. Exactly. Yeah.
But learning to embrace ourselves as we are, that's so hard because all we ever want to do is just be better and pick at the stuff that's not good enough and fix that and fix this and fix that. As opposed to, if you're able to reflect on, you know, perceived mistakes and give yourself some self-compassion and think, okay, you know what? Yeah, I yelled at my kids an hour ago. It was a tough day. It happens. And I forgive myself for that. Instead of beating yourself up that, oh, you know, I'm such a screw up and why did I do this? And that's, I think, more our go-to. But if you start making a concerted effort to have that compassion and love towards yourself, then you end up actually feeling a lot more fulfilled. And those people who are able to have self-compassion, they're not delusional. Cause I think our fear is always, I don't want to be delusional, but like, I'm better than I am. Like, we want to have a realistic view of ourselves. Right. But I don't think that's what ends up happening at all. We're afraid of being deluded, which is kind of amusing. Cause I think we delude ourselves the other way. We delude ourselves that we're a lot worse than we are.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point too. I think that a lot of us, we do, overestimate isn't the word, but we think that we are worse than we actually are. We don't give ourselves enough credit for all the good things and all the successes and all the, you know, wonderful aspects about ourselves that we, you know, inhabit. We just always want to focus on the one thing that screwed up your day today, or that one, you know, thing that your child made you do to get angry. It's just, there's so much other good stuff. What's some like practical things that we could do, specifically mothers, some practical things that they can do to begin to practice self-love?
I do like, so one of my favorite things is reflecting on what you've done well. That's, yeah, you never do that. And then really thinking about quote unquote mistakes or where we feel like we're not good enough and being able to really embrace ourselves. And I almost sometimes, if there's something that I've done that I'm ashamed of myself, or I think, oh, that wasn't good, you know, I'll actually visualize myself giving myself a hug, because often we'll tell somebody else the story. We're going to want them to validate us. Right. And they may, or they may not, we cannot control what our friend says, what our parent says, what their opinion is about something. So if you're able to actually be there for yourself as your own greatest support system, you will feel that inner stability within yourself. And hence, you're filling your own cup and you don't have to worry about external validation and other, like, things you cannot control, other people's stuff.
Yeah, yeah. What do you say to the client that comes to you and they're like, Dr. Nayak, I have three kids and they're all out of control. They drive me crazy all day, every day, because I'm homeschooling them. I don't have any time with myself and I feel angry all the time. How can I start to shift things so that I'm not always yelling at my kids and just feeling miserable?
Couple things. One, I think it's really good to express our feelings as moms. For example, if they're, you know, throwing toys all over the place and this and that, you can just say, I feel frustrated right now because this is going on and I'm going to take like time out myself and take a few deep breaths, whatever it is, or like remove yourself from the situation as much as you can, you know, but,
you would say that to the kids, just to clarify, you would say that a lot to the kids. Okay.
Yeah. Like my son will go berserk before bedtime and it's a 45 minute thing. And I start losing patience and I'm
bedtime. I'm like, yeah.
Oh my God, please. I just want to unwind, like just for a little bit before I go to sleep myself, like please. Yeah. And I'll say, I'm starting to feel a little frustrated, like please like cooperate or whatever, but I will let my feelings out and let them know. Cause I think what we do is we try and keep it together. We try not to be angry and then we explode, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As opposed to just kind of validating our own feelings. Like it's okay to be angry. Like, of course, like you feel frustrated. Your kids are acting like maniacs. You're stuck at home all the time because of COVID, homeschooling them. There's no way out. So I think being able to express that in a healthy way is good for you. You're modeling good response, right, to like a negative feeling. That's good for them to see. Yeah. And also, if you can, if there's any way whatsoever that you're able to take some time to yourself, even like 15 minutes, please do that. Like maybe first thing in the morning, you wake up like 15 minutes before your kids get up, have your morning cup of coffee, quiet time, whatever that means for you. And hopefully if you can get your kids to bed at a normal time, you've got a little bit of time before you go to bed to unwind, get some time to yourself. And, you know, if you really can, of course, getting external help, be it family or like a babysitter or whatever, that's huge too. That COVID has kind of messed that up. But under normal circumstances, I would say definitely outsource things if you can, or like just even family, because, you know, sometimes that doesn't cost money. Like if you're like strapped for cash, but, you know, you can just even just a little bit of a reprieve, like minimally a few hours a week, even just something so that you can just breathe, because otherwise you're suffocating.
Yeah. I hear, you know, mothers who feel like guilty for asking for help. Like, I don't know, maybe they just don't want to appear like they're not a good mother. Like, I need, can you watch my kids? Or maybe they don't want to bother the other person, or they don't want to be a burden. Or do you find that to be an issue?
I come across more moms who want to do it themselves because they do it the best and they want to control it and have it be perfect and can't let go of the imperfection that might take place if they like give the reins to their husband, let's say, or things like that. That's one of the things, I think.
Yeah.
But for moms who are struggling with asking for help, that's a very tough one. But I think that's also falls in the category of semi self-sabotage as well. Like if you really are going to stick to that and you can't, like you're not going to get help, then you're just going to have to deal with it and be in that cycle of not having any free time to yourself and feeling like you're going to go bananas.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about therapy last night and how today therapy is a lot more, people are embracing it more than they were 10, 20 years ago. And especially in African American families, if you see a therapist, it's like, what's wrong with you? Like we don't talk about our problems to strangers. We don't hardly even talk about our problems in our family. And so I think that there's a lot of shame around asking for like outsourcing things and asking people to help you. And I can just, if I were a mother, I would, if I need a therapist now as a single person, I know I need some therapy as a mother.
So. But we're just getting help because we want to be better for our kids.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You want to be better
for your kids. It's for a greater good. I mean, you're trying to do something to be a better parent than maybe your parents, for example, or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. When you mentioned on your site about becoming non-functional, what does that mean?
Oh, that's a tough one. So that's, you know, a lot of people who come to me for help, I think they feel like they're drowning and they're on the verge of just like probably like nervous breakdown kind of mode, meaning working full time, not taking any time to themselves, going full throttle at home, not sleeping enough. And you get to the point where you can't, I mean, it's just not sustainable. So you're at a point where you're like bordering on not really, you're not, at some point you're not gonna be productive anymore, like at work or at home.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just being overwhelmed with all of the responsibilities and other stresses that you just can't do anything.
Like many moms feel like they're kind of drowning and their to-do list just gets longer and longer and longer and they can't, like they just can't catch up and they might do one thing and then it's 10 more things. And without some proper kind of without taking some time for yourself and really managing that time with some increments, then you're finally able to, and that's what I do with my clients. We work on that. And, you know, a lot of the complaints are my to-do list keeps getting longer and it won't, like, I can't make a dent. And then after, you know, we're done working together, they're like, oh my God, I feel like I have so much more time. And like, I don't know what I was doing before and what was it, like, you know? But it's just,
so what do you do with them, Dr. Nayak, where they get that? Yeah. Like, oh, how do you do that?
So we figure out, you know, I usually will find out what the person's values are, what their goals are, what their priorities are, what do they want for themselves? What is their ideal life? And how do we get as close to that as we can? Because we all do have the power to carve out that life for ourselves, whatever that might be. I know we feel really constricted sometimes by societal expectations and norms, but truly, like, the world is our blank canvas and we can do whatever we want, actually. Mm. So I will usually force them to take time for themselves. They have a really hard time with that. But we will find it. We will find small blocks of time, mm-hmm. even like doing like, practicing some alone time in the mornings for like 15 minutes or so with like a morning routine all alone. That like helps rejuvenate them to just kind of tackle the day. Usually we'll find some like manageable working out times. A lot of transforming, like living for me instead of doing things for, let's say, my parents or, you know, things like that. And finding like scheduling times for, especially for the working moms who are working full time, scheduling time to hang out with like each individual kid, let's say a couple times a month. That way when they've got that and they don't feel that they're not present. Cause even let's say if you spend a few hours a month with each kid individually, that's a lot of time over a year. I mean, that's tons of hours, tons of quality time. Not to say that when you're home the rest of the time, you're not spending quality time, but then it takes the pressure off of, you know, having to be perfect and be present all the time. We work on perfection and really trying to get rid of that. Like, let's not try and be perfect. Let's forgive ourselves for mistakes. One of my clients, she would save her chores for when her kids were sleeping and stuff. And I said, why? You've got two kids. They can play with each other and then you can get stuff done. So she started kind of doing some more chore stuff when they were awake and playing, but you could watch them. So that freed up some of her actual free time that she could use to read or journal or paint or, you know, and then by doing that, she really felt like, because one of the things she said to me was, I want to be like more of who I was before I had kids. Like, I want to get in touch with that person. So I said, well, who is that person? And that person had hobbies and, you know, when she's able to dedicate, like free up some time to do that, even if it's for like a half hour a week, she really feels like she's being who she wants to be.
Mm. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because I had a friend who, she has kids. I remember years ago, she was telling me, Ebony, once you have kids, there's no more of you. Forget about you. It's now all about the kids. And I remember thinking, whoa. So is it possible to still maintain some of your, you know, identity just as yourself and the things that you like and be a mother at the same time?
Yes. And I think that's an attitude and a mindset, and that's her attitude and mindset. I don't think that's not a fact. It's a choice. I mean, so if you want to be who you are, you're never going to be the same as you were before after you have kids. That's true. That, you know, there's nothing to be done about that one, but you can still be you and be a mother. And I think by having your passions, your interests, your career, you are showing them that this is how a mom is supposed to be, as opposed to 1,000% like motherhood and even if you live your entire life for your kids and you have no other hobbies and nothing else, I mean, they grow up and they have to leave the nest. And what exactly are you going to do? Like, you don't want to be that overbearing, like meaning relying on your children for your own entertainment and your own purpose. Like, that's not fair to them either, actually. So, but setting a good example of like a nice hybrid, like being you, having your goals and, you know, doing your hobbies, your career, but also being 100%, like trying to be as present as you can with them and be there for them and be a parent to them. But a lot of what we're doing, like we talked about in this conversation, is modeling what it is. Like, kids, whatever they see, that's what they grow up thinking is normal. So we are setting their bar for normalcy. I mean, it's a lot of pressure, but you know, whatever that is. So like, if I'm crying and screaming every day, my kid's gonna think that's normal.
Right. Yeah, you brought up something also interesting when you mentioned values. You're like, what are your values? And I think most people, if you just kind of ask them that question, out of nowhere. It would take them some time to maybe come up with five values. How important is it as a mother to know your values, and what role do those values play in how you relate to your kids?
So by identifying your values, that gives you a barometer with which to be true to yourself, because you can't be true to who you want to be or who you are unless you know what your values are. So whatever that, like honesty, for example, if that's one of your values, you want to be honest, and then you want to show your kids that you're being honest, and that kind of modeling, right? So modeling whatever our values are, hopefully we make an impression with our children and they learn to be honest, for example, right?
Yeah. So it's knowing your own values that you can model to your kids how to hold values.
Yes. And also at the same time, being true to yourself.
And being true to yourself. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, because I know that, like, I wrote down my values maybe a few years ago, and they're like in a journal somewhere. I just need to go revisit it. But I was recently talking to a life coach a few days ago, and she was saying that she knows what her five values are. She has them written down, and she, every time she comes across some type of project or there's something that she's thinking of doing, she'll ask herself, is this aligned with my values? And if it doesn't align with the values, then she knows she probably needs to just not do it. So it can really help you if you're aware of what it is that you value in life. We are almost out of time. So I want to ask you one more question about woman who feels that her life is in shambles. And we kind of already talked about this, but since we're at the end, just where can she start? And you've given us a few tips, but this person who is like completely distressed and maybe is non-functional and maybe even on the verge of depression, or maybe because if they feel that their life is in shambles, do you find that these people are often depressed?
Can be. It really depends.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
On what's going on, but yes.
Okay. So how do you coach someone to get out of that space?
Well, women,
sometimes it can be hard to get out of the bed.
Yes.
When you feel that way. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, well, there's a difference between that, because sometimes people actually need medical help, which is go see your doctor if you're truly depressed and you can't get out of bed. That's probably a little bit beyond the scope of life coaching. But
yeah, yes.
If you're struggling and you feel like there's just no way out, or like no way out of this mess, you know that, you know, we women are, we're very strong, and we're definitely stronger than men. Period. You know, that's just a fact. I mean, men could never be pregnant or give birth or any of it. It takes a really strong person to do that. But we are all a lot more strong than we give ourselves credit for. And it's unbelievable the strength you will show when life really like hits you with something hard and you don't know how the hell you're gonna move forward. But if you look back on, I think one of the most helpful things you can do is look back on some tough times in your life and think about how you persisted. I mean, you're still here, right? Like you made it through. It was tough. And when you were in the depths of despair, it felt like it was never going to end, but it did. So this too shall pass. I write about that all the time, because things in life have highs, lows, they're all temporary, which is why it's just good to try and find that like inner stability and peace within yourself, because life is always going to throw different things at you, but it will end. The bad period, the struggle, it won't go on forever. And you will handle it just like you've handled whatever you've handled in your life so far.
That's wonderful advice. That is wonderful. Yeah. But this too shall pass. That's a big one. I always try to think this is just a moment in time. This moment is not going to last forever.
It comes and it goes. That's why it's better to not, the more you can become an observer of your thoughts and feelings, the better, because if you observe your feelings, then you're not getting sucked into the drama from moment to moment, because like when I was younger, I would get sucked in so much more easily. And now I'll just think, okay, this is a situation. It's not going to last forever. And in fact, probably in like 2 days, it's going to get resolved. So there's no point in stressing over this and like spending energy and time worrying about it. Like it's going to work itself out. So meh. like move exactly. on to something else.
Yeah, as I'm a teacher and I work with high school students, and if they're getting upset over something, I always ask, is this going to matter like in 6 months? Are you going to care about this in 6 months?
Not even next week. It won't even matter next week. For next
exactly. Especially for students, right? It could be in a few hours is something that might not even matter.
It feels like the world is coming to an end in high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And high school came to an end too. I mean, that was the worst. And it ended. And honestly, I don't even remember half of it.
God. Well, I actually loved high school, Dr. Nyack.
Oh, you did? Oh, you're one
of
those people. Okay.
Yes. I was one of those people for sure. This has been great. Thank you so much. Your last words with "this too shall pass." I mean, that was pretty powerful. Is there anything, do you have any other like last words of wisdom or advice for mothers who just want to do their best for them, for themselves and for their kids and their career?
Hey, the fact that you're even thinking about it means that you're doing great and you're doing the best you can. That's all you can do. And keep doing it. Like it's fine. This is a tough time for all of us in the world. You know, human beings are being put through the ringer like mm-hmm. in this year. So yeah. just know that, you know, this it's gonna come, it's gonna go, and we just have to make the most of it and really cut ourselves some slack. Like every single day, cut yourself some slack. Don't worry about what other people think and mm-hmm. just know that, you know, you're good enough. Like it's good. Whatever you're doing, it's fine.
Great. Where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on my website, www.stresscleansemd.com or Priyanka Nayak Patel on Facebook, Stress Cleanse MD on Instagram, and I'm on LinkedIn as well, Priyanka Nayak. Or you can email me at stresscleansemd@gmail.com. I'd be happy to chat. This kind of stuff is my passion and nothing makes me happier than like helping a mom to get to a better place, because then I personally feel like I'm making the world a better place by doing that. So that is, that's my life's calling and passion. And honestly, it makes me feel alive. Like that's why I had a coaching session yesterday and I came out of my room and I said, oh my God, this makes me feel so alive. Like I'm really just doing like the work that I've meant, like that was meant, yes. to, meant yes. to do. And I just love this so much. So please,
yeah.
happy to chat.
Thank you so much. That's beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Nayak. What a great conversation. I'm so happy that she was able to talk quite candidly about the struggles that not only mothers, but women face, the stresses of having to be both masculine and feminine at particular times, and how to balance work and family, and how therapy is very much something that you should not be ashamed of if you need the extra help to manage mentally. So check out her website and her social media, and also check out my website this Sunday for my big takeaways from my conversation with Dr. Nayak. And tune in next week for another conversation with a fabulous guest. Thank you so much for joining me today, and have a fabulous week until next time. Okay, bye-bye.